Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. I'm Pokey, and I'll be your host again today. I wanted to do a show in general about my experiences with GPS, different devices, different units, how I use it. There's so much to it, and it can be so useful, and it's got so many different ways you can use it. I use a couple for some pretty specific things, and I find it very useful. I started off with a TomTom unit, which I still have, and I still do like it. I think out of all the things that I have, the TomTom still seems to work the best for car navigation, from getting from point A to point B by means of an automobile. I bought my TomTom used at a pawn shop. I think I paid $60 for it, and I've been very happy with the device. I think it's been worth every penny. The device is good. The service, the company behind it, I don't have quite as many good things to say about them. The biggest downside to a TomTom is their awful, awful software that's required to update the device. It, first of all, is Windows only, specifically Windows. It will not run under Wine. I don't think it'll work in a VM. Though it may, you're welcome to try, but just the USB drivers don't work unless it's running right on a Windows machine. So, you know, for the first time ever, I'll say fortunately I have a Windows machine around that I can do that on. Probably hear my wife and my mother-in-law in the background. They just got home. The second thing about their software is that even when you have a Windows machine and it's running properly on there, it's still a piece of crap software. It's possible to brick your device, your TomTom, using their software that they require you to use. So if you do get a TomTom, especially a used one, which I wouldn't buy a new one, they're just too expensive. But if you get a used one, the first thing I would do, as I do with any device, is go through all the settings and make sure that they're to my liking. And what I would do specifically for a TomTom to protect it is make sure that it is not set up to automatically accept updates and downloads. Just make sure it doesn't do that. Make sure it asks for your permission first. Because otherwise, as soon as you run the TomTom Home, is what their software is called, as soon as you run TomTom Home with that TomTom plugged in to that Windows machine, it's going to start downloading their updates. And like I said, it's likely to just brick that machine. I don't know why, it's terrible. So what I do instead, make sure it doesn't do any automatic updates, plug it in and back everything up, back it up twice. They have a feature in there that will do a whole device backup. And then they have the capability to back up individual parts of the device. So you can back up the firmware, and then you can back up the map, and then you can back up your points of interest data that you've added, et cetera, et cetera. I like to do both. I like to back up the entire unit, and then I like to back up those pieces individually, because I've had occasions where TomTom Home has broken both, and I've needed to fix it in different ways. So it's an incredible pain in the neck, their software, but it's, as far as I can tell, it's the only way to get anything done. And you really want to make sure you have a backup of that map, because it's a very expensive map if you lose it, and they are not going to give you another one. Not unless you've bought a new device and it's in, you have a code to download it with. So just keep that thing backed up. Once you do that, though, there are some updates you can get for it that are useful. But I have found the most success by doing the updates one thing at a time. So let it first update your map if you have a map update. Then go out and get your voices, and then go and get your points of interest or whatever it is you want to add to it, the little icons if you want to do something like that. Just do them all separately. Don't try to do them all at once, because it just seems to choke on any large task. And it does everything very, very slowly. You're going to spend a day doing this. I'm not certain, but I suspect the bottleneck is actually the USB connection. I think it's like a USB 1.1 in this thing, not a USB 2.0. So that seems to just slow everything to a crawl. And it takes a long time, but that's what I do. If you do have a TomTom and you do use their software and you're updating stuff, you can do a search for the welcome screen, the splash screen, for Hacker Public Radio, because I uploaded a copy of our little oval sticker, so you can use Hacker Public Radio as your splash screen. I thought that was something fun. If you're ever traveling through New Hampshire with a TomTom device, you can also download the New Hampshire State Liquor Store point of interest list, because I made those personally, and I verified all those locations. There's like 70 of them, a little over 70, I think. But since liquor stores are the only places in New Hampshire where you can buy liquor, you know, and it's one of our kind of touristy things because there's no tax on there, I thought it'd be useful for people. So that exists. Those two things exist. Those are, you know, somewhat my creations, or at least my uploadings. You can edit and modify stuff on the fly on your TomTom, like speed limits and stuff. I do that an awful lot wherever I'm driving. If there's not a speed limit there, I go ahead and I put the speed limit in on the road. And I allow, when I hook up the TomTom to get my firmware updates and stuff like that, I do allow it to back those up to their servers, and it lets them share it within the TomTom community, speed limits and stuff. And I don't mind that. I know it's kind of like doing work for someone else, but the way I see it is that, you know, if I ever lose my device, you know, one way or another, at least that stuff is there. It's backed up. You know, I can probably download it again, though you can't specify which corrected map data you want. It does get incorporated one way or the other. But until you need to do that, make sure that you have that community update stuff. If you're updating your own device and correcting your own maps and stuff, make sure you have that turned off, because I made the mistake one time of accepting community map corrections, and they overwrote my corrections, and theirs were all wrong. So I had to do like all the speed limits for my local area where I drive all the time. I had to do all over again because they had 30 mile an hour zones where it should have been 20. Just ridiculous. I was really upset about that, and there was no way to undo that mistake and get that back. I know that a lot of people, like in cities and stuff, I don't live in the city, I live out in the country pretty much, or small city. I know a lot of people don't like to leave their TomTom in their car where it can be seen. They're afraid someone's gonna bust a window and break it out of there, or steal it out of their car or whatever. I don't think that likelihood is incredibly high for me, so I just kind of leave mine in the window all the time. But I have a contingency plan there, and that is that the TomTom has a lock on it. You can put a software lock on there, and you need a 4-digit PIN code to unlock it. And you can put like a, you know, a message on the screen, this device belongs to blah, blah, blah. So what I've done with mine is I've put that lock code on there so the machine cannot be unlocked. It can't be, you know, reformatted or plugged in. There's nothing you can do to it to unlock it without that code, as far as I can tell. You know, maybe you could write or build a specific tool that did that, but you can't get into the machine itself on your own, and their TomTom Home software won't allow you into it without that PIN. So while that PIN is up there, mine says, this device belongs to name, reward if found, and a phone number. So I figured that's probably enough to get the thing back if anybody, you know, quote unquote, finds it, you know, tries to use it, plug it in, doesn't turn on, can't get the PIN number, but, you know, you can get a reward for turning it in. That might be enough to get the thing back. Maybe not, but it's all I can come up with, and I got my fingers crossed. What else can you do, right? So the next bit of GPS tech that I'm very fond of is an application for Android, which is available through the F-Droid market. I believe it's also available through the regular, Google Play Store, but I don't use that as much. I really like F-Droid. There's an application called OSM Tracker. OSM referring to OpenStreetMap. You may have heard the show I did on editing OpenStreetMap using their Potlatch editor. I did get a piece of feedback about that, a question about that, saying that Potlatch had updated their version. The Potlatch is the editor online. It's a JavaScript editor for OpenStreetMap project. And somebody asked me how that update had affected what I said, and I don't think it affected it at all. I don't see any difference in the editor that affected anything that I said in that show. So that information, as of early summer 2013, is still accurate. So if you haven't begun editing OpenStreetMap, but you have any interest in that, please go for it. It's great stuff. It's great fun. But anyway, the OSM Tracker is an application that tracks you intentionally. This is, you start it up, you tell it when to begin recording, and it records every, you know, so many seconds every interval. You specify the interval. I think I have mine update every second, and it's fairly accurate. I've used it on two different cell phones now, two different Android phones, and it's usually accurate to about 3 or 4 meters is what it says. It tells you its accuracy. It records everywhere that you're going, and at any given time, you can take a note. There's a few dozen pre-programmed notes that you just tap a button, and it adds a word to a point on your track. So when you view that track later, it's like the trace of where you've been is blue, I think, and the notes that you take are like, there's an orange dot and some orange letters or, you know, word, whatever you type out there, text note below it. You can also take a photograph, but I'm not quite sure how that works because it doesn't seem to upload the photographs and you don't view them the same, at least not through the Potlatch editor. Maybe there's another way to do that. I haven't gotten around to figuring that out. It hasn't been too drastically important to me so far to take pictures or you know, dictated notes. I just use a text note and that's fine. And I'll use mine with my phone up on the, like, a dashboard mount in the car, and I'll run OSM tracker. And the roads around here are all mapped really well. They're really done very well. Very rarely do I find a road that I get to add now. It's usually like a new development or something, and it's real obvious when those show up. Everything's there, but what isn't there a lot of times is the speed limit information. There's just no data whatsoever. I'll, you know, kind of like time it so that as I'm going past a speed limit sign, I'll hit the text note button, and then as I'm driving down the road, I'll put in the number of the speed limit. So as I pass a 35 mile an hour zone sign, I'll just hit the button, and then as I'm driving, hit 35, and it places that dot where it was when you hit the text note button, not where you are when you complete it. So that's a efficient way of doing that kind of thing. You can take other notes as well. There's one for like gas stations. So as you're driving by a gas station, you can hit the gas station one, or fuel, I think is what it says, because they don't call it gas everywhere. It's petrol in some places, but you already know that. There's other notes you can take too. Whatever kind of data you like collecting is the kind of data you're going to be interested in, and I'm, you know, not here to tell you what to do, just how to do it if you have any interest in it. The other thing that OSM Tracker can do is, if it's got an option to, you know, quote unquote, display trace. So when you do that, when it does, it pulls up a map from the OpenStreetMap. It brings up their map and it lays your trace over it. So you can use it as a working map. You can use it to show you where you are right now, and you can use it for navigation. It works especially well on foot. I use it for that when I'm out hiking or hunting or whatever. I'll leave it running, and it doesn't seem to eat up much battery if the screen is off. It seems to be able to go for quite a long time, so it's not something I worry about. And if I am going to worry about it, I'll bring an extra battery for my phone, like an external, you know, USB charger or whatever. Those are really great to have if you're out in the woods relying on your phone. I've been considering a rafting trip lately, and I'm thinking of doing the same thing to map the river, but I'd want to take an older phone, a backup phone for that, and stick it in a couple of plastic bags, but which is something I've been considering. The other thing that's nice about OSM Tracker is it has the capability that I much appreciate. It has the capability to directly upload your traces to OpenStreetMap. You do have to give it your username and password on the OpenStreetMap website, but I think, don't quote me on this, you want to do your own research, I think it's an approved application by them, or I think they're somehow involved in it. I don't know. I don't see a problem with it for myself. Maybe you do, but, you know, look into that. But I do like the ability of it to upload directly to OpenStreetMap. So usually, you know, my traces, as they're called on the website, my traces are waiting for me by the time I get my computer turned on. So I think it's a useful product. I love it. There's also, I have to look now because now I forget. There's another OpenStreetMap somewhat approved, OSM Droid. There's another one. I like to get the one off of the F-Droid market, as I've said, not just because I like the F-Droid market, but in this case, because in the Google market, there are two programs called OSM Droid, and they're not the same program, and one of them I really didn't like, but for some reason it still has high ratings, and just, I don't know, it's there's something hinky going on there, something fishy that I don't like, and I stay away from that one. So grab that one from F-Droid if you can. OSM Droid is pretty much just a map viewer. If you want to pan around and look around at OpenStreetMap data and look at the map, that's a good one to view the map with, because it lets you pan around and stuff conveniently. One thing about both of those programs is they seem to be kind of conjoined twins. They use the same folders on your directory in your phone and access each other's data as far as, you know, what they download from OpenStreetMap. So I do like that about them, that you can use both programs without using up more storage space. But, you know, instead of if you used a third program to view the map or a different one, it would download its maps all over again, or you'd have to link directories or something, and these two just kind of take care of it. That's the upside to them. The downside to them is that they don't cache data very well. If you look at something on the map, it will download that particular tile. That they're not vector graphics, they're not vector maps, they're tiled like JPEG maps. It'll download the JPEG for the size of your screen at that scale, at what you're looking at. And if you pan around a little bit, it'll download those as well. And it'll store those. But that's the extent of caching. You cannot ask it to download, you know, your entire state at every scale. It just won't do that for you. Nor would you really want it to with JPEG images. You want a vector map for that. And they don't automatically update. Once it's downloaded, it's downloaded. If you want fresh maps for either OSM Tracker or OSM Droid, if you've made edits and you want those edits reflected, you have to delete the existing files and then view the old files again. So OSM Tracker, like I said, it's great for navigating out in the woods while you're walking around, but only if you have pre-scanned that entire area and looked at it, or if you have a cellular signal out there. If you're going out in the woods where you got no cell signal and you haven't pre-scanned that stuff, you are toast if that's the only GPS you brought. If that's the only map you brought, you're going to be in trouble. So don't do that, please. But for downloading a pre-cached map and a vector map, this is where Osmond comes in, or OSMAND, or however people want to pronounce it. I'm not really sure, but it's OSM, meaning OpenStreetMap, AND, not meaning Android, surprisingly. What did it stand for? It was something like something and navigation something. I don't know. It stands for something. It's a pretty good product. Especially if you're an OpenStreetMapper, it's really the only one that I have found that allows you to, you know, do car navigation with your own edits and have your own edits affect your navigation. It's not 100%. It's still, I don't know if it's officially a beta, but it kind of feels like a beta when you use it. Osmond does work really well as car navigation. It's not quite as good at routing as the TomTom. I don't think so. And my phone has kind of a small screen, so it's much more difficult for me to read the names of the roads as I'm approaching them. But I will say that Osmond seems to be far more accurate in estimated time of arrival. For whatever reason, that just seems to be, not that the TomTom is way off, but, you know, there's usually a 3 or 4 minute difference. And Osmond is, like, for me anyway, it seems to be dead on. Now, maybe that's because I have taken the time and made the effort to specify every speed limit area and where the signs are and where specifically where the speed limits change for my area. Maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe not. I don't know. I think it's just got a good guessing algorithm in there, because it seemed to be real accurate even before I put in the speed limits. And I like Osmond. They're vector maps, so you can pre-cache them. You can download an entire state or many states or your country, whatever country you're in. You know, anything that's available on OpenStreetMap.org, you can get downloaded in Osmond, which is the upside. You can pre-cache it. You do not need an internet connection for this thing to work and work properly. It does offline routing properly. It displays your maps, your location, everything. All you need is clear enough sky to get a GPS signal, which it pretty much just does. The downside of Osmond, as far as mapping and map accuracy goes, is that the guys who run Osmond, who are building and maintaining it, it takes them quite a bit of time to render the vector map from OpenStreetMap data. They seem to only get the entire Earth done about once a month, maybe twice a month. So if you go ahead and edit OpenStreetMap, your edits may not show up for quite some time. It could be up to a month before your corrections show up. And if those are corrections you're relying on, they just may not be there when you need them. So edit early and edit often, folks. Get that done. Osmond's got some features in it that would be really, really fantastic if I had a bigger phone. If you've got like a Note, one of the Galaxies or whatever with a big screen on it, you may find that you really, really like Osmond because you can load up the screen with interactive features. There are things on there for measuring distance. You can mark a point and then mark any other point on Earth, and it will measure a straight line distance between those two things. And I have found that to be tremendously useful in specific circumstances. Well, it's for hunting, for one. There's a law in our state that says you cannot discharge a firearm within so many yards of a residential building. And that can change depending on how buildings are situated, how close they are to one another, etc. But without even being able to see the nearest building, I was able to place that building on the map and find out where I was at before ever going out and see where I was planning on hunting and just make sure that I was legally far enough away from that building to discharge my firearm while hunting. And there's other use cases, I'm sure, but that's the one that I found useful. It can show you elevation, which I don't get on my TomTom. I think you can if you go into like some sub menu, but it doesn't just display it for you. You can get your speed that you're doing and your max speed. It can display that for you, which the TomTom does also, but not nearly as accurately. I can place speed limits on OpenStreetMap exactly where the signs are, whereas with TomTom, the closest you usually get is the next nearest intersection. And if you got a long stretch of road with very few roads intersecting it, but maybe like there's a section of business and there's an open section where, the speed limit can change 3 or 4 times in a segment of road like that. So the TomTom is far less accurate when it comes to showing you the current speed limit for where you're at. So Osmond's much, much better at that than anything else I've seen. What else can Osmond do and pull up in its menu for you? You've pretty much got with Osmond an unlimited number of favorites and of points of interest that you want to add in there. TomTom limits you as to how many favorites you can have, which it's quite a few, but if you bump into them, it's pretty frustrating because now you got to get rid of some of your points of interest for others. And or like your favorites. And I have like everything favorited. I use my GPS all the time, and I'll use it to show me the most efficient route. Even if I already know it, I just like to have the route shown to me there and the quickest way to get from two places that I don't often drive between, and I may find some back roads that way that I didn't think about or whatever. But I do like doing that. And when you bump up against that kind of artificial limitation that you can only have so many favorites, that's frustrating to me because I know there's more memory on the device. There's not a reason why they should limit you, yet they do. And in Osmond, they don't do that. Another nice thing about Osmond is it's got different modes, and you can specify different menu settings for different modes without having to go in and change the whole menu around. You can't do that with the TomTom. You want to change some features, you got to change those settings. Whereas in Osmond, you put it in car mode, you set it up the way you want it to behave in your car, and it behaves that way. And then you can switch over to bicycle mode or walking mode, and it will display your preferences and settings the way that you have them for those. Maybe you don't ride a bicycle, but maybe you, rollerblade. So you use the bicycle setting for that or whatever. The point is it's got 3 or 4 different modes that you can just switch to on the fly, and I find that incredibly handy. It's got lots and lots of settings. It's got lots of experimental features, and they're always adding new features to it and updating it. And it's one of those programs, too, where you never run out of exploration to do with it. It's just been a lot of fun. I think that's about it. I think those are the 4 things that I've used. I know I've used some other GPS software on Android, and I've seen a couple other devices, but I haven't used them long enough to even remember them or to find them useful in any way, but these four programs I use, I don't use OSM Droid as much anymore. I find that OSM Tracker and Osmond cover the bases that thing, you know, I used to use that for, but I have it on my phone just because it doesn't take up any extra space. And, you know, very often, you know, I'm the weirdo, I guess, that's got two GPSs running in the car at the same time, you know, and I'll put in my location in both of them and see which one, you know, comes up with the best route. Because usually I know the best route to get from where I want to be, from where I am to where I want to be. I know that for the most part. Oh, and that's another thing that I will grant TomTom on the upside in their routing. Like if you use it to get to work and get home again, you know, every day, and it gives you a route that you know to be inefficient or not the best route, and you ignore it and just go another way, it will eventually learn that that's the way to go. Now, whether it knows that because that's the way you go, or whether you follow it and it notices your speed decreases and it learns traffic, their documentation seems to imply that it learns traffic patterns, but I'm not so sure that that's true. I think it may just learn where you like to go and route you that way eventually. And it doesn't do it immediately. It doesn't even do it in the first few weeks, but it seems like eventually it will learn your preferred routes and take you that way. Whereas Osmond simply won't do that. And again, Osmond's routing, sometimes I've seen it take you, or take me rather, I've seen it try to take me a half a mile out of the way, you know, take a left and then a right and then another right and then a left, where I could have just gone straight. And I have no idea why I would have done that. The speed limits were all, everything indicated I should have gone straight. I'm not sure why it did that, but it tried to do that once. But it's coming along. It's getting there. It's getting better all the time. I gave it a really positive review on the Android market, but I think I have to rethink that review and just, it's absolutely fantastic. It's fabulous if you're an OpenStreetMapper, but maybe for the average user, it might not be the best thing in the world, but I really do like it. I know there's others out there. There's the Google Maps, and their routing that probably comes with Android phones, I guess. I think I've disabled that because that thing just annoyed me. Though its routing seemed to be pretty good, it just wasn't what I was looking for. It had all the downsides of Osmond and of the TomTom without having most of the benefits of either. You know, small screen, because I have a small phone, you know, limited functionality. It just, it wasn't for me. I didn't like it a whole lot. I have a coworker who likes to use Waze, W-A-Z-E, I believe it's called. And that's kind of a neat concept in that it seems to be the first GPS, though several have tried this, it seems to be the first one that can update traffic situations in real time. I'm not at all sure how it does that, whether it just knows how fast you're going and makes the assumption that several people in the area go in a certain speed that there's traffic, or if you have to report it. I don't know. I haven't used it. I know you can report like accidents and ongoing situations through it, but I don't know, I haven't used it. And they just got bought by Google, so if you love Google, that's the way to go. If you hate Google, you might want to avoid that one. I don't know. That's been my experience so far. If you have had a different experience or you would like to add something to it, I'd be more than happy to hear what you have to say about your GPSs and your mapping and your navigation and your topic. Please, you know, consider doing that here on Hacker Public Radio. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.